it's Rocontra with Anna DeBlasis right here on 720 WGN. Here's the man, Congressman Adam Kinzinger, who joins us from the heart of his own district right now.
Nice.
Right.
In Illinois.
Bean, baby.
And let's talk about, well, all right, there's a lot going on here. I still cannot figure out how the president could not find a hotel in Hamburg, Germany.
But no luxury hotel availability, it turns out.
Yeah, and apparently the Hampton Inn wasn't good enough for him, so that's how that worked. Anyway, I don't know. It was all very weird. But I just saw you on CNN a few minutes ago. You were talking about the issues here concerning obviously what's going on in North Korea, also what's going on with Russia. Tomorrow he meets with Vladimir Putin. And in this meeting with Vladimir Putin, it appears that it's just going to be Vladimir Putin along with Sergei Lavrov, who is the foreign minister, and then Rex Tillerson, the opposite number from the United States, of course, the Secretary of State, and then two interpreters. This is not generally how bilateral meetings go. They tend to have larger staffs in those kinds of meetings. Are we expecting that we're going to see a readout from this, Congressman?
I would hope so. I think that's typical. I think, you know, there'd be a lot of suspicion around if there wasn't. You know, I don't have a problem with a smaller kind of meeting. I hope there's somebody there to take notes. But, you know, it's especially with where you have kind of two adversaries and it's just kind of a first meeting. So, but it'll be interesting. And I think, you know, I think if President Trump can go in with, in essence, I've been calling it kind of a brick wall. Like, that's what the Russians react to. Like, hey, we are not going to compromise on this. We're not going to compromise on this. Let's find areas where we can work together. I think there's not many, maybe North Korea. But I think it can be a successful meeting for him. And I think he needs to bring up the election meddling, but not make it the centerpiece. Because, again, when you have translators and stuff, a lot of times eaten up on translation. But and there's a lot of huge issues out there.
Right. And sometimes things can get lost in the translation or misinterpreted in the translation as well. Should the president bring up the meddling?
I do think so. And I think, again, I don't want him to make it the centerpiece because that could be a hour-long conversation in itself. And you have important things like Syria, like Ukraine, like North Korea. But I do think it needs to be brought up, and I think brought up to the perspective of maybe not a lengthy discussion, but look, we know it's you. We're going to take appropriate action in return. This is your warning. Do not do it. And it's not just with us. It's with our European allies and other nations because, again, this is – and I've been trying to make this point. I think we get lost in the day-to-day of the tweets and the arguments and the whatever. This is a broad – we have to look at the forest instead of the trees here, and the forest is – people's faith in the institution of democracy. And you know, right now people feel disaffected and disconnected from D.C. and from especially Springfield now. They feel disconnected from it. But the reality is you still can go and vote every 2 years. If people start losing faith that their vote can make a difference in their government because of outside meddling, and eventually the Russians, look, if they could, they'd even switch to changing vote totals. They didn't do it in this time, but that's where you have real issues with the integrity of government, which to me is a much broader concern than who won, who didn't, and everything else.
You see, you know, the critics will be watching for further signs that President Trump is soft on Russia. He came out today and seemed to give some of his harshest criticism yet, saying that Russia's been involved in destabilizing activities in Ukraine, their support for regimes like Syria and Iran, and that situation is also a problem. Do you think he will be? Well, does that set the tone for the way you think the meeting will go? And do you think it needs to go farther? Is that far enough?
Well, I think it's far enough. There were a couple statements. You know, he said Russians did meddle, but then so could a bunch of other countries. I didn't understand the second part of that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I guess pointing out the failure of our intelligence in Iraq, I thought was not appropriate overseas, especially. However. He has, as I've often said, look, his actions on Russia have been really tough. It's the words that are confusing. So now to see the words start to match the action, I actually thought his speech to Poland in Poland was one of the strongest President Trump speeches I've ever seen. And I got like really fired up watching it. And so the words are starting to match. I know the administration around him believes this. But I do think, and I think part of what builds into Trump, the president, is this idea that if I admit that the Russians did this, it's somehow delegitimizing the presidency. There are some on the left that are delegitimizing his presidency. We're not. We're just saying we need to get to the bottom of it because this is going to happen again. And trust me, in 2018, when President Trump is tough, in 2020, when he's tough, The Russians are going to try to do the same thing, but it's not going to benefit the Republicans this time.
Right.
It's going to benefit whoever else.
Yes, because they're not Americans, as it turns out.
Right.
And I think that Donald Trump understands the game here. I mean, that's the one thing I think he definitely gets is negotiating and playing games and these kinds of, you know, hiding things in your pocket and being tough and being a bully when you have to be and, you know, trying to threaten all those things. All those things are really very much his wheelhouse. But but the problem is he's playing it with a guy who is at a different level than he is. He's he's dealing with he's a New York real estate guy, which is great. I mean, he's got to be tough. He's got to be sharp. He's figured out, you know, how to build hotels around the world. He's figured out how to, you know, how to coerce and coalesce and all the things that you have to do that. But it's a very different world when all you're really concerned about is your, you know, relatively small business when you think about the number of people that are working there. It's a big, you know, it made a lot of money. It's you know, it's very wealthy, but it's you know, I think the Trump organization is under 100 people in total. And now he's got to run a large organization, which is the United States of America. And Putin's been doing this for a really long time. And Putin also understands, you know, many of the tactics of spycraft and all those. I mean, you know, he hasn't ruled Russia with an iron fist for two decades because he's an idiot or he doesn't prepare himself. And he will be highly prepared for this. And I don't know what I mean. Do we have a sense? Do you guys have a sense of as the Republican caucus in Washington been told, you know, these are our objectives here?
No, we haven't. But that's not necessarily uncommon. I've met with General McMaster. There was a group of four of us, and he's outlined a lot of our foreign policy goals, especially when it comes to Russia. And I think they do have the administration has a very clear-eyed view of what they want to do. But I think your point is accurate. Look, I think every president, frankly, since, you know, I like George W. Bush a lot, but I think he got rolled a little by Vladimir Putin.
Sure.
President Obama got rolled by Vladimir Putin because, again, these guys are in office for 8 years if they're lucky. Vladimir Putin's been there for a very long time, and he's got KGB training. He knows how to read people's weak. I mean, he could read any of our weakness and know how to exploit that. So you're definitely playing with a very tough individual. But I think if the president remembers, and this is the key, that he's got the backing of a $19 trillion GDP economy and the world's largest military ever, and Vladimir Putin has the backing of like a $1.5 trillion GDP and a military in complete disrepair, that's how you can walk into that with strength.
Yeah. Well, so he might want, I hope they told him that before he goes in.
Write that down.
Maybe they can meet him in the bathroom of the hostel they're all staying in and say, here are your notes. This is the way it's going to be. All right. Back to the serious issue of North Korea, though. This does seem intractable. Every president now since, I mean, every president that's been dealing with the Kim family in China, essentially since the end of the Korean War, has failed to be able to contain them, especially in the last number of decades. Between Kim Jong-un and his father, they have been able to expand militarily. They built up this very, you know, for the size of their economy, very robust defensive system. They can basically turn Seoul into ashes if they want. They could firestorm Seoul with conventional weapons. They can do a lot of damage to Japan. They could fire back at China if they wanted to. I don't think that's necessarily in their best interest. None of this is in their best interest, I suppose. But what do we do to contain them, do you think?
The question is on Kim Jong-un, is he a nihilist or, you know, is he rational? I don't think we really actually know that answer. If he doesn't fear his own death and will do anything to hang on to power, that's a very dangerous actor. If he has some rationality there, I think there's an opportunity potentially for negotiations, for diplomacy. But I think we have to step up the pressure. This is happening, by the way, with China. So you have these banks in China that are doing business in China, in North Korea, and a significant amount of business with the United States, sanctioning them. So it'd be like, you know, if an economy 10 times our size sanctioned, you know, Chase Bank, that would have an effect in our domestic economy. So I think sanctions are important. They take a while to take effect. I think we have to play tough with China in the region and say, look, you are basically the thing standing in between a nuclear North Korea or not. But at the same time, two other things need to happen. We have to prepare for military action, which, pray God, never happens. That's the next to worst case scenario. And the other thing is we have to rapidly build our ability to intercept missiles, whether they're in the boost phase or whether they're in the terminal phase like the THUD system. We have to be able to have significant missile defense, because if we allow North Korea to have nuclear weapons, we have to be able to defend ourselves against it. The only other option, if diplomacy fails, is military action. And I got to tell you, that for me is very, very frightening. That kind of thing would keep me up at night. You'd lose millions of Koreans, damage one of the most powerful economies in the world, and there are 25,000 Americans right now in Seoul, in South Korea.
Is that what you heard when you heard the president today say that we would confront North Korea very strongly? Those are the words he used, and that it's...
We're thinking about severe. Use the word severe to describe plans
severe
that they have.
Thing. We're considering severe things, is what he said, for North Korea, but didn't talk about a red line or anything like that.
Yeah, and I think we are considering severe things. Again, that goes through China and through some of basically that's the only ally of North Korea. Further sanctions here, probably some military buildup, update in our military plans. Again, we don't want to go to war, trust me, but that is the next to worst case scenario. The worst case scenario is, you know, North Korea with a nuclear weapon, they're launching at us or our allies. But again, a military strike, I think probably against North Korea would lead to a full, like, Korean War II, and with casualties probably just as big or bigger, unfortunately.
Mm. Right. As General Mattis said today, it's unthinkable. I think you're using that same word, too.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be casualties that we haven't seen since World War II in terms of numbers.
Right.
Because even the Korean War, as calamitous as that was for the peninsula, it was, in terms of casualties to Americans, on the smaller side of wars for us. But you don't want the loss of human life. And also, I think you make a very important point about the disruption to the world economy. Because you take South Korea offline, or you take Japan offline in this, and then think about the political fallout of it, and, you know, what's left. And if he attacks, then there's going to be, you know, very little left of North Korea, and those people have already been, you know, tortured and starved and, you know, work camps and all the rest of it. I mean, it's just a humanitarian crisis beyond humanitarian crisis. And do you want that on your resume if you're president of the United States? I mean, it may be unavoidable, but there are ways to you know, try to forestall it. And one of the ways, I think, for the president is to just be careful what his rhetoric is along the way, because that's why you had the president say severe, and then 2 hours later, General Mattis was out going, hey, mm-hmm. we're talking about diplomatic things here. We're not talking about military. Trying to cool
I think there's something to that, but I think, you know, Americans need to remember it's a relatively recent phenomenon that we've engaged in war and lost relatively few people. It's not minimizing, obviously, anybody that died in the war on terror, Iraq, Afghanistan, or anything. Every loss is tragic. But relatively speaking, you think of Vietnam, you think of Korea, World War II, World War I, we're talking casualties in the tens of thousands or World War II's cases, hundreds of thousands. Now, that's the type of thing. We wouldn't lose that many, because we have technology now. We have significant air power. The problem is the second we launch a preemptive strike, we can take out their nuclear capacity. We can take out some of their conventional capacity. But they have been preparing for this for 60 years, and it's a triggered response of let's vaporize Seoul, and it would be massively bad.
Congressman, thank you very much. Appreciate
Thanks, Congressman.
It.
Anytime.
All right, Congressman Adam Kinzinger right there.